Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We have not talked a lot about the Rockets today, Seth. They are back in action today. We get back-to-back afternoon weekday basketball games, which, Seth, as you know, I've been rubbing my hands together and getting ready for this for these 2 days ever since they re-announced the schedule. I love
these grueling back-to-backs where the Rockets have to travel in between. Are these home games? I don't know what they are. I don't pay attention at all to whether it's a home game or
anything. I pay attention to what mode of transportation they use to get from the hotel to the arena. If today is a bicycle day, then boy, they're going to be tuckered out. If today is a shuttle day, then I feel good about their chances. Yeah. But they play the Spurs today at 1 o'clock, so make a note. You get afternoon basketball the next couple days.
It's and so far, I think, without Russell Westbrook, without Eric Gordon, the thing, and I guess the thing that's most encouraging is that all these role players have really stepped up, you know, and the defensively, the Rockets are, they're sixth in the bubble. I keep seeing this cited as like some kind of awesome stat that the Rockets are sixth in defense since they returned. But that is like sixth out of the
22.
Out of 22, right.
22 teams in the bubble.
Yeah, so that's still that's top 10. The old rule is you got to be a top 10 defense to have a chance at winning a championship, other than unless you're LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Other than that, almost every NBA champion was at least top 10 in defense in the regular
season.
Seth,
I would submit that, it's top 10, and I would submit that even if you're proportionalizing it out, like, oh, it's only 22 of 30 teams, given how crappy the eight teams that aren't in the bubble are there, I would say they're probably sixth overall. Yeah. Like, I would say none of the eight teams would necessarily be ahead of the Rockets in terms of defense if they happen to also be
very
in the
good
bubble.
Point.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's, very good point.
Yeah,
and it's been like, okay, so what did we say beforehand? That, all right, they're going to get killed on rebounds, but try not to get beat on second chance points, and you're going to have to make up for it with turnovers. And they've been Harden and company have been stealing the ball I almost swore again, Sean. I've been. You know what it is?
You're loose today, man.
You know what it is?
What's
it's
that?
Dusty Baker and Cintron and all these guys just flat out throwing out the expletives like it's no big deal. Now it's gotten me feeling emboldened, like I can start swearing.
Yeah,
and everything.
Don't do that.
So sorry. So they're playing. They're and this is what's important. If you're going to play defense where you switch all the time, then you got to be nails with your communication, right? Everybody's got to be on their P's and Q's and mentally dialed in. And we've seen progress in the bubble since they've returned. I think steadily each game you start to see it look a little bit more fluid. And their rotations just snap a little bit better. So I'm finding myself, I was kind of timid at the start of all this, Sean. I was kind of like, I don't know how to feel about the small ball. Now I'm getting downright cocky. Like I feel like they're going to, even despite having these eight regular season games that they can play, I still feel like there's going to be a little bit of an ambush effect, like a little bit of a blitzkrieg effect, where teams aren't going to know what hit them when they get this 6 seconds or less style Rockets that's playing defense and swarming all over the place.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, in this eight-game stretch, there's a lot of teams that aren't playing like the seed that they're going to be. You know what I mean? They're not playing, and the seeds don't matter in terms of home court. But they do
Bucks,
you know, the Bucks have looked a little wonky in the bubble. Now the Raptors have looked pretty good. They've looked really good actually, which is ironic because they're the one team that had to leave. They had to leave Toronto for Florida before everybody because Toronto's not a super COVID friendly place right now. So they just got the hell out of there and got to Fort Myers before everybody got to Orlando. But right now it's looking like, Seth, the Rockets, there's not much they can do to really change their seed. Denver losing to the Lakers last night at the buzzer still keeps the three seed in play. And I don't know that I want the 3 seed to necessarily be where the Rockets land, because I'd rather they get the Lakers than the Clippers in the second round of the playoffs. And I think the Rockets deep down would rather get the Lakers than the Clippers in the second round of the playoffs. If you're on the 3-6 line, that means that if you win that series, you're playing the Clippers in the second round of the playoffs in all likelihood. Mm-hmm. If you're on the 4-5, which is where they are right now, that means you feed into the Lakers, who, look, the Lakers might have to go through a very, very frisky Portland team in the first round of the playoffs. I'm not saying they're going to lose to the Blazers, but I'm saying if the Blazers sneak into that 8 seed, and right now they would be in line to play in a play-in against the Memphis Grizzlies, that they're going to give the Lakers a bit of a tussle. So right now, season ended today, we'd get Rockets Thunder in the first round, which would have some juicy storylines for sure.
That would have some super juicy storylines.
Yeah.
I regret that there won't be the fan interaction, I suppose, of Russell Westbrook going back to Oklahoma City. It wouldn't be the first time he's gone back to Oklahoma City, but it would be the first time in a playoff series.
Yeah.
And there was nothing but love for him when he went back the last time, but it just would have been pretty intriguing. I think, yeah, the Lakers, I think most people now, it's almost consensus, isn't it, that you'd rather see the Lakers first than the Clippers?
Yes.
I think people just flat out, the Lakers have more difficulty with small ball than the Clippers do. I think there's just the way everything matches up favors the Rockets playing the Lakers, and I'm okay with that. I'm not sitting here saying that the Lakers are some pushover or something, and it's going to be a cakewalk. But that's their best shot at getting to the finals.
Yeah, and it might almost be mathematically impossible for the Rockets to fall to the 6th. The Jazz are the 6th seed right now. The Rockets are 2 games ahead of them, and the Rockets have the tiebreaker over the Jazz. So, yeah. and right now the Mavericks are going to be the 7, and some. Either Memphis or Portland, Phoenix is still in that mix, San Antonio, all in that mix to be in a play-in for 8-9.
So with Rajon Rondo, I guess that's the big question with the Lakers, is Rajon Rondo and
Avery Bradley.
KCP there. Yeah, well, Avery Bradley's out for good.
Yeah.
It's just not they're not the same team right now that you're going to see in the postseason or that you saw in the regular season.
Yeah, and those are perimeter guys that you'd need against a small ball team like the Rockets. It's going to be fun, man. The Western Conference, Seth. I'm looking at both conferences. The Western Conference is so much juicier than the Eastern. The Eastern Conference playoffs are going to suck, at least for the first round.
It's almost
Orlando, Brooklyn, yeah. Sixers without Embiid and Ben Simmons right now. The Pacers? Mm-hmm. Ugh. God, I'm going to need to gamble to be interested in those games.
However, this is... I saw this piece by Wojnarowski, and I was kind of angry that they even brought this to my attention, because I don't like thinking too far in the future these days. It's too hard to predict anything. You've got this minor issue of the fact that the NBA season is supposed to start back up probably before we have a vaccine again. They like all these other sports were kind of figuring out, like, okay, how can we get through 2020? And you realize, oh, wow. Yeah, the 2021 season for the NBA would mean, man, the NBA might all of a sudden start have to deal financially with the issues that Major League Baseball just went through.
Yeah.
Because Major League Baseball got hit with the COVID at the beginning of their season. The NBA had already played 80% of their games, so a lot of that money was already in the bank, and it was a bit of like, okay, how do we minimize the losses? But all of a sudden now, immediately after the NBA Finals, you're a month away from the start of the season. There still won't be a vaccine. You're still going to be in a situation where you might want to have bubbles of some sort. And I think the NBA has got to be – they've got to be exploring all possibilities.
It's a huge
for
issue.
Okay, how do we have – will we be able to have 25 to 50% attendance by then? Will we have to have mini bubbles? What are we going to do? And also, only there's 40% of Americans right this moment who don't want to get the vaccine if a vaccine becomes available. So I don't know what the hell is going to happen if 40% of Americans opt out of the vaccine.
It's on those 40% at that point.
At that point, you're just going to have to start saying, like, okay, look, if you want to get into this restaurant, if you want to get into this basketball game or what have you, show me your papers.
That's right.
I don't mind. I'll go full commie for a year if that's what it takes for me to be able to attend games in person.
Seth, they can put a chip in my brain if it'll let me get back to my life as to what it was before.
Show me your papers.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Texans training camp, we've got you covered from pillar to post.
Yeah, they can put a chip in my brain for any reason whatsoever.
Any reason.
I don't care.
Yeah.
If like some shady government prison shows up and says, we want to put this chip in your brain, I'll be like, you know what? I'm a true American. I trust
put
you.
Put your safety
Boom.
First.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The horror film that is the chip in Seth's brain. So
the great thing about having a chip in your brain is that it exonerates you from everything you ever do. You blame just blame the chip in your brain.
Blame it on the chip. Yeah. Blame it on
I've
the
I've watched enough movies to know that.
That's a good call. Questions leading up to training camp. We talked about some of the ones yesterday that we may need to wait for the Texans till the regular season to see. What are a few that we hope to glean early on in training camp? Because we've got you covered here. Texans training camp going on right now here on Sports Radio 610. We will hit that next. I will be out at training camp. Practices start on Friday, but I'll be coming to you from in the bubble all week long. Here on Sports Radio 610, In the Loop, and Clint and Show. Noon today with In the Loop, they've got McClain coming on at his usual time, 5:15 each day this week, on with the guys in the afternoon. Landry and John asked me an interesting question yesterday, Seth, and I'm curious your thoughts as someone who's been to hundreds and hundreds of training camp practices, both as a player and a media member. They said, when you get out there to the first practice, and this is true, when you get out there, you get to the first practice, and it's almost like football Disneyland, where you're trying to pick, you know, you walk into Disneyland, you're like, do I go to Tomorrowland first? Do I go to Frontierland? Do I go take my kids over to the castle? What do I do? There's a lot. So which land do I go pick? Do I go to quarterback land? Do I go to defensive back land? Do I go to lineman land? My answer to the question as to which place would you go first, assuming everybody's doing their, you know, their drills and it's not 11 on 11 time, right, is I would go right over to where Deshaun is throwing with receivers, and I would be watching for two things. One, I would be watching for timing, especially if they're playing against actual defensive backs, but even timing of just running routes, because one of the things that Randall Cobb said was, we've only gotten to work out together like five times. Normally, it'd be 30 times. You know, Deshaun is still getting used to what it's like for me to come out of a cut, what the timing is, you know what? And I'm getting used to the timing of when he's releasing the ball and stuff. So I would want to see that, and I would also want to see just how the receivers interact with each other with so many new, well, not so many, but, I mean, two brand new faces, but they're prominent faces, and the face that's not there anymore, obviously, in DeAndre Hopkins, and just watch what the interaction is among the receivers and then the receivers with Deshaun, because I think a big part of the reason why Cooks and Cobb are here, I think more so the reason they're here than the reason DeAndre's not here anymore. I don't think DeAndre's not here because they thought he was a bad guy or anything. But I think a big reason why Cooks and Cobb are here because they're routinely at practice. They are high character guys. They're guys who are, you know, they're very positive. I think they do feel like that. These are guys, not that Hopkins was a bad influence, but these are guys who will undoubtedly be a good influence and somebody good for Deshaun as a younger player to be around.
Well, and I think at least one of the issues that Bill O'Brien reportedly had with DeAndre Hopkins was that DeAndre Hopkins didn't practice all that much, you know, and did, probably for valid reasons most of the time, just because he was also a very physical player that was banged up a lot. It's most important to show up on Sunday. But, I mean, that's something that a lot of coaches and a lot of quarterbacks really care about. You remember that one of the things that Peyton Manning would always gush about with Marvin Harrison was just that Marvin Harrison was always at practice. Like, it was very important for Marvin Harrison to be out there and getting the reps and forming the timing and all of that. So I think that time spent forming a relationship and forming the rhythm and getting everything on the same schedule, that's really, really important. They're going to miss out on a lot of that. I would go over to watch the wide receivers first too, Sean. And I think very specifically I would be watching Randall Cobb, because this will be the first time Deshaun Watson has had a veteran dedicated slot receiver. DeAndre Hopkins has been the slot receiver by for the most part. He's gotten the most reps as slot receiver since Deshaun Watson has been here. And he's not a genuine slot receiver. You know, he's not. DeAndre can get really good work done out of the slot, but it's not the same as the separation that a Julian Edelman or a Wes Welker or a Randall Cobb in his prime back with Green Bay would get. So I want to see exactly what the relationship is with Randall Cobb. Sarah Barshop had a really good story in ESPN.com yesterday where she talked about the various players who have been the slot receiver in the last 3 years. The top three were Hopkins, Fuller, and Ellington in the last 3 years. not all those three guys combined, you take their slot receiver reps combined, haven't had as many reps in the slot as Randall Cobb. Like, they've got a slot receiver expert there now that Deshaun Watson can form a relationship with. I'm excited about that.
It's interesting. You know, Cobb is a guy, Seth, if you had just told me, don't look at the back of his football card, don't look at his Pro Football Reference page and see what the stats were, and you had asked me, how many 1,000-yard seasons has Randall Cobb had? And I just think about it, I'd go, I don't know, probably like, what's he been in the league for, 9 years now, 9 seasons? This is his 10th year? 3, 4, maybe, I would say? He's had one.
Yeah.
He had in his biggest season, the only season he's made the Pro Bowl, by the way. Like his I like him as a player, and I think it's a good signing by the Texans. It may be a little pricey, but if he's healthy, I think just yes, the presence of a veteran slot receiver who is going to pick up the playbook quickly. There's absolute value in Cobb, and he's coming off statistically one of his best seasons with Dallas last year, and I'm surprised in looking at his career. He made one Pro Bowl. He had one huge season. It was in 2014 with the Packers. That was the year they should have gone to the Super Bowl, but the Seahawks had that monster comeback where the Packers dropped an onside kick in Seattle in the NFC title game, and the Seahawks went on to win, I think, in overtime in that game or on a two-point conversion. He had nearly 1,300 yards that year. He had 12 touchdowns. He had 91 catches. He hasn't had another year that's even remotely close to that in his career.
Sean, which I would say, yeah, I'm not predicting that he's going to be an all-pro receiver or anything.
Me neither.
And what I would say is, to illustrate that point, how many 1,000-yard seasons do you think Julian Edelman has had? Like, if you were going to give me, because you know where I'm going with this. Well, like, if you're going to give an honest assessment.
Right, right. And Edelman's probably been around about the same amount of time as Cobb. He's in his early 30s. I would say 2.
Yeah, he's had 3.
Okay.
So, but it's not like week in and or year in, year out, he's churning out 1,000-yard seasons.
Yeah.
You know, part of that's because of injury. He hasn't been the most durable guy. Boy, he's not been all that. Well, he's been all right.
He was suspended last year.
That's right. The suspension was why he only played 12 games last year.
Yeah.
That's right. But, I mean, there's years where he's sub 1,000 and he's still just as valuable to that offense. And that's what Bill O'Brien wants. He wants an offense where some years it's going to work out for a guy because in specific game plans, that guy was getting opportunities. But he never wants to have guys that are like, yep, he's going to be a 1,500-yard receiver because we're going to force the ball to him come hell or high water. He doesn't want that kind of team.
Yeah, in some ways, I think the Randall Cobb's resume, it fits perfectly into what O'Brien's trying to do, which is an even distribution of the football. He's a guy who's been used to that throughout his career. All right, Payne and Pendergast on a Tuesday with you here. How many Power 5 conferences would need to back out of college football this year? How much Power 5 attrition would there have to be in college football in order to ruin college football for you this year? We'll discuss that next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday. Nice to be with you. So, Seth, we await more news out of college football to see if there's going to be a season this year. The Big Ten, it appears, didn't make any decisions. I've not seen anything come down in the news wire that says that the Big Ten's postponed or canceled their season yet. That was the direction it seemed to be going earlier this week. And then a lot of their coaches spoke out. Many players spoke out. Parents of players speaking out. And I think probably the biggest thing that at least put a temporary pause to it was their Power 5 brethren, specifically the SEC and the ACC. Less so, it sounds like, the Big 12. The Big 12 sounds like it's the ultimate fence straddler right now. But the SEC and ACC, maybe unsurprisingly to many because of the footprint geographically that they comprise, largely southeastern football, rabid parts of the country, they want to play football. Their schools want to play. Their fans want to play. It appears as though a lot of their players and coaches want to play football this fall. And one of the things that picked up a little bit of steam yesterday when the storyline was being conveyed that, boy, this is really, I think it was Matt Hayes, who writes for Bleacher Report, covers college football, said he'd gotten a text from somebody involved in one of the meetings, you know, a Power 5 administrator, something like that. One of these anonymous sources that have been floating around through this whole thing, that it was really squaring up as Big Ten and Pac-12 versus ACC, SEC, and Big 12. And my thought at that point was, okay, it wouldn't feel normal, not having the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, and we would miss out on a few of the games that I was really looking forward to, like Ohio State and Michigan, after Harbaugh threw all kinds of shade at Ryan Day on a conference call last week. And it's just less college football as well. But, boy, if there were a season of college football where it's the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, that captures a pretty wide swath of the teams that are relevant every year.
Yeah.
I got myself to a place mentally where I'm like, okay, I'm cool with my Saturdays being SEC, ACC, and Big 12.
So, yeah, what am I going to sit here and say, no, don't take away my Berkeley football? Of course not. I don't give a damn. I don't give a single damn. Don't give me, I guess, Ohio State and whatnot would be a little bit of a letdown, but I could live without it. I think that that would be the one conference, boy, or the one college sport, I think, Where out of, like, let's say all the big time sports, whether it's big time pro sports or big time college sports, that would be the one where you could say, I could lop off 40% of the teams here and still feel like the national championship was a valid national championship. It would just be, okay, it would be weird. You lost out of your few contenders in the Big Ten, but who really cares? Because every year it's just between Clemson and the SEC anyway. So, yeah, I'm good with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I could definitely roll with that. I don't know if the schedule gets tweaked at all, where maybe these conferences play a game or two outside of the conference against each other, which could be kind of fun.
Yeah. But I think the idea that you had of, if the Big Ten opts out, but a few teams within the Big Ten choose to just go on and do their own
thing.
I guess then it becomes a question of, okay, are they going to have enough takers to get legitimacy? How are they going to find enough games to get legitimacy within the rankings? Like, if Ohio State is going around, beating up on a bunch of NAIA schools or something, I don't know. I don't know how good you can tell they'll be or not. I guess they could play what if they played Notre Dame like three times or something? Well, I don't know. Here's Notre Dame's already hemmed up back in their ACC situation.
They're in the ACC. Yeah. Well, Seth, here's what I floated on Twitter yesterday. And this is one of those scenarios that is not going to happen, but if you're a college football fan, it's super fun to think about. Is because this used to happen a lot when realignment was going on, like 5 or 6, 7, 8 years ago, whenever it was. You dream about, boy, this is what the Super Conference would look like. These 16 teams, can you imagine what the schedule would look like? And it's never going to happen, but it's fun to let your mind go there. If the Big 12 were to back out, let's pretend that the Big 10, the Pac-12, and the Big 12 were to all say, we're not playing football this fall. But some of their powerhouse teams were amenable to still playing football. You would be left with a 15-team ACC and a 14-team SEC. So 29 teams total. My thought yesterday was, well, hell, put Michigan in the ACC, make it 16 teams, take Ohio State and Oklahoma, stick them in the SEC, and go ahead and make that 16 teams, and you got a 32-team superstructure, just like the NFL.
Yeah.
Two 16-team conferences.
I mean, gosh, if I'm looking at, so far, I'm just scrolling through the top 15. I get through the top 15 where Michigan makes an appearance. So let's just say out of the top 14 at this point, you've got, I'll include Notre Dame in the ACC, obviously. Yeah. Through the preseason top 14, you have all of Oregon and Ohio State that aren't in those two conferences. So, I don't feel like I'm missing out on just all of the cream of the crop of college football if we were limited to just those schools.
Can you imagine being a player at Ohio State? Really, any of these schools? I mean, if you're a competitor at any of these schools, can you imagine sitting there on Sundays watching these other conferences play football? Or not Sundays, Saturdays, I should say. Not Sundays. On Saturdays, sitting there, like being a player playing for Ohio State, where you have, from the time you were in high school, maybe dreamt of playing at Ohio State, dreamt of playing in the college football playoff, dreamt of winning a national championship, all of those things, and you're sitting at home while schools in the SEC and ACC are playing football.
You know what? Joel Klatt was on Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks' podcast yesterday, and I listened to it, and Joel Klatt started off in a way in which I thought, oh my gosh, this guy is drinking the company Kool-Aid so much. But the more he spoke, the more it started to make sense. And I thought he was being dramatic, but this was a very, very good argument, I thought. was, okay, we have our safety concerns. You got to assess what the risk is and all of that. But let's think about this. You're removing all these kids, like the kids you were just talking about, kids that are hyper-focused, hyper-driven, they have structure, they have all these really good things going in their life because they have college football, or because they have college lacrosse, or they've got women's and men's soccer, all those things. And then all of a sudden, you just pull the rug out from them. You know, and like, let's really assess what is the risk of these kids kind of all of a sudden awash in all this, the same thing that so many other kids are awash in right now. A lot of uncertainty, a lack of structure, a lack of a drastically less physical exercise, all of this. And what is the toll that takes on the mental and physical health of those kids? And I'm not sitting here trying to be overly dramatic about it, but I hadn't really quite thought about it in that context. Now that we can see that the positive test results are so low at so many of these schools, and that the number of serious health outcomes from high school and college athletes is so statistically low. I don't mean to minimize when it actually happens. It's a big deal. But, man, there's some pretty dire public health consequences to pulling the rug out from all those kids as well. And you have to balance that when you're making these decisions.
Yeah, I think societally, Seth, it's the same flavor of things that I think get ignored sometimes by people who are so hyper-focused on being as vigilant and being as kind of holed up as possible in their homes against the coronavirus, which is suicides, unemployment, mental
drug
health,
drug abuse, domestic violence,
yeah,
all that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those things tend to take a back seat when people are looking at worst-case scenarios for the coronavirus.
Which, and again, I would say, you know, for all the people that were so skeptical of the NBA trying to do something or baseball or football trying to do something, Those entities, are they not doing what we hoped you would have to do? I mean, initially with the shutdowns, it was, hey, let's shut down. We got to regroup. We got to figure out a strategy to move forward because life does have to go on somehow. And what college football now, I think, because it wasn't cohesive and because it wasn't all one unified front, I think it looked like more of a mess than it actually was. What we have are cases and situations, including in high school. I'll say, I think the Texas high school sports, like from some of the reports I'm getting from some of our listeners, are that these camps so far have been remarkably well organized and very focused on social distancing and following the protocol. And the positive test results have gotten low. So what we have is, we have these situations where people are abiding by all the rules and restrictions that we're advocating, and yet somehow we want to punish them for that. And I don't, like, if it's feasible and if it's possible to pull it off, then by all means, pull it off. And I think we're actually very close to pulling it off.
Yeah, I think so too. And Seth, I think especially in a city like ours where, you know, the statistics with the virus at large, not within athletics, but with the city, say that A, we may have opened up too soon. B, there were a lot of people ignoring things through various functions and public events and things like that led the virus to go up. If anything, the way that most of athletics has handled this, with a few exceptions like the Cardinals and the Marlins, but the ones that have handled it well, the message it sends is all these things that the public officials are espousing, they actually work if you go execute them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if they're working with these sports teams, they can, you know, masks, social distancing, all of those things, and that you can still conduct business in some way, but you do it in a responsible way.
One of our listeners says, the Pac-12 not having any sports this year would not change my sports viewership at all this year, and I played sports in the Pac-12.
I know who that is.
That's Coach Middlescreen, I think, right?
Yep, it's got to be.
He threw shot and discus at – do you throw shot? He put shot and threw discus at UCLA. Yeah,
I would say if I were the Pac-12, Seth, I would be concerned about following the Big Ten into the cancellation of the season bucket if the SEC and ACC and Big 12 are going to keep playing sports, because the Pac-12 is closer to losing its Power 5 membership than it is to being a powerhouse Power 5 conference.
Yeah.
They've been irrelevant
I've caught myself saying Pac-10, like, I think three times this show.
That's
already.
All right.
Yeah, I know it used to be. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to go running around talking about the Big 8 or anything.
It used to be the Big 8 as well.
Lots of things have changed.
Internet, so forth. Hey, real quick, one conference we have not heard, I don't think, anything from yet. I think, at least in terms of canceling their season, they seem to be more inclined to play their season right now, is the American Athletic Conference, where U of H plays.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're waiting to see what the Power Five do. I would say that if there is significant postponement within the Power Five, maybe even overall postponement within the Power Five, I think the Americans should have conversations about playing their football anyways. Just playing a conference schedule. If they wind up being one of the only college football conferences to play college football this fall, they will have massive eyes on them. I think it'd be a huge recruiting tool for the conference for them to play football. The American
it would
athletic.
Be. And you know, I know U of H got a lot of flack for not being more transparent with what they were doing initially. And then eventually we started to see what they were doing, which is pretty, I think, extreme and advanced compared to a lot of what other schools were doing initially. I think they fall into that category of what a lot of these schools have. It took a few weeks to figure it out, but they've got a plan. The vastness of college football and college athletics made it really hard to figure out just what was going on, and I think we tended to hear the horror stories most, and we heard about the schools that had these extremely high positive test cases. And lost in the shuffle and kind of thrown to the side was the fact that, oh, lo and behold, a lot of these schools have actually been doing a really good job of it.
Yep.
And I think maybe we need to trust these schools, and these schools need to trust themselves more than they actually are right this moment. Coach Middlescreen said that you throw shot. That's what I thought, but it felt weird because it's not a – you're certainly not – you're not throwing that thing overhand.
No, you know? I remember being coached in gym in junior high. Do not throw this. You try to throw it, you're going to wind up getting Tommy John surgery.
Poor little 12-year-old's getting Tommy John.
His arm is dangling off of his torso because he threw a shot.
You remember picking those up when you're like – I don't know if you ever like when you're 10 or 11 years old and you're wondering like, how the hell does anybody throw this any measurable distance?
Yeah.
It's astounding.
Yep. All right, we head into the 9 o'clock hour. The Astros break their losing streak last night. What's our confidence level that they can keep this thing going? And also, golf trash talk. If this is what constitutes trash talk in golf, they might need to step their game up. We'll get to that as well. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.